Welcome to the Great Security Debate. This show has experts taking sides to help broaden understanding of a topic. Therefore, it's safe to say that the views expressed are not necessarily those of the people we work with or for. Heck, they may not even represent our own views as we take a position for the sake of the debate. Our website is greatsecuritydebate.net, and you can contact us via email at feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net or on Twitter at securitydebate. Now, let's join the debate already in progress.
I brought up the pig slaughtering, which is, you guys know what pig slaughtering is. Not
I'm from Chicago. The whole city is pig slaughtering. Everything but the squeal.
I'm not familiar with it.
So pig slaughtering is where somebody text messages you, you respond back, they build up a rapport with you, and then lo and behold, somehow you end up investing your money. Not with them. And this is the interesting part where people are like, do people still do this? They literally have playbooks that they built to train these people on. So people are interviewing for IT jobs. They fly. They think they got the job. They fly into Thailand. They get abducted, taken up to Myanmar on the border between China, completely lawless up there, locked into a building. And they're forced to be on social media for 15 hours a day. John Oliver does a great skit where he's like, 15 hours a day? Are you kidding?
There was a great story about this in the Journal of Washington Times a few months ago. Story of a guy who got out. He was their finance manager.
Oh, my God. It's crazy because it all started after COVID with, like, the downfall of certain casinos. Not, like, Macau casinos, but, like, the gambling. And they brought people in and started training them. And these books teach them how to build rapport and trust. Rapport and trust. This is what you do in the first week of messaging, right? And, like, John Oliver also does a great job. I'll shoot you the John Oliver skit because it's absolutely incredible. It's hard to get people to watch 35 minutes of security awareness training, but I'm sure if you sent your entire company John Oliver's skit, not only would they watch it from beginning to end, HR probably wouldn't be totally impressed with you because of some of the stuff that comes out of his mouth.
So right now, they're not impressed with me anyway.
You would die laughing through the entire thing. It's like, who replies back to some of this stuff? Hey, Wendy, how are you? I'm not Wendy. And then he goes, there's this one where it's like, hey, Dr. John, how's my horse? He goes, right. So he's talking like how you engage, and then it's like, oh, sorry, I thought we had ran into each other. And they've already looked into where you went to school, where you live, who you correspond with, everything about you, so they can pick up subtle things that in the end of week one, they drop something about, you know, one time when I was out in Cincinnati, blah, 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 it's like, oh, no way, did you ever go here, right? And now they build rapport, start to build trust, and then they start to talk about how they made money on the side. And it's one of those things where they're like, yeah, to show you how to do it. And the person's like, okay, that's where this stops. I'm not investing money with you. And the person on the other line goes, whoa, no, absolutely not. I would never ask you to invest your money with me. I don't want to be responsible for it, whether you make money or lose money. I was simply saying I could show you the sites I used and the methods I used, right? Like, this is what I used. And they send it over. And these are real apps that you can download off the Apple Store. Great reviews, 15,000 views, right? Like, but lo and behold, like what they're actually signing up for isn't that. And they start to put a little of their money in, they see it make money. You know, 6 months later, now they're putting like 50,000 in because they've made it, you know, 100 grand. So now they're putting more money in, they get their family to put it in. By the end of the year, they're at $1 million and they're ready to cash it out. And it says, hey, you got to pay taxes on this. And that's when they realize something's fishy. Not only did they realize now that all their money is already gone, the last straw was for them to try to pay taxes on it. In the U.S. alone, this was over a $3 billion industry in loss. So if you're a startup, like Abnormal, with some of the shitty BDRs, right? CrowdStrike, Sentinel One, etc. You could send your BDR to minimum, to work, to learn how to build trust.
I think that's a better use of BDRs than sending me LinkedIns.
Yeah, yeah. A unicorn who's trying to get to 100 million ARR was able to get to 3.2 billion.
And with an equally viable product.
support, you name it.
Oh,
so
wow.
So I call it pig slider. So when you say it to people, like, everyone I brought it up to, I'm like, have you guys seen or read about pig slaughtering? Right? And, like, everyone pauses, they're like sausage-making schnapps? No, not sausage-making. I'm not talking gutta here, guys. I'm talking, like, and they call it pig slaughtering because the whole, like, bulls, what is it? Bulls make money, pigs get slaughtered.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible. And it's, humans are the most important element.
John does a really good job of saying, and guys, the point of this, why are we talking about it? He goes, if I can just educate a small part of the population, that maybe, just maybe, somebody will start to question, should I reply back to this? Because I'm going to be honest, if I got the Dr. John, how's your horse? I'm probably responding back. But do I actually think that I'd end up engaging and investing something like this? I'd like to say no. But Dick Tracy, for example, who did her research, who questioned every part of it, still was like, oh, this is a real site, this is real. And people still put their money in.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it was pretty amazing. So I was thinking, like, off topic, pig slaughtering, the relation to, one, something real going on, bring awareness to it. It also goes back to the idea of building trust. Two, Trace was in the dark of what's going on with crypto. And, like, so, like, the $22 million payment that supposedly was just made, they knew right where that crypto landed as soon as it got there. So Chain Analysis, which also they brought up back here, Chain Analysis, they're like, CFO or whatever came from Chain Analysis, and the person at the table was like, so how do you feel about Chain Analysis? As I was talking about tracers in the dark, I'm like, is this a loaded question? They're like, no. I'm like, I personally think Chain Analysis is a good, people question the idea of people shouldn't be out there creating software to track what I'm doing in my life, and part of that is Bitcoin. I'm like, yeah, but it's a blockchain. It's open. It's public facing. So
right.
If you did want to create your own software,
as we can, doesn't even show.
Well, just replace. So I'll play the other side of the coin. Replace the word blockchain with LinkedIn. You've got a public service. And by the way, this goes back to the opening comments. The comments we make may not reflect our actual views. You've got this public service, and people are mining the bejesus out of it. They're scraping it. And so why wouldn't you go into blockchain expecting that that's exactly what people are going to do?
Yeah,
have we not met the internet?
I don't think those are the same thing.
Why not?
I don't think they're the same thing. Because in LinkedIn, number one, I choose to be there. Okay, so there you can draw the parallel.
But I choose to make
something.
But I choose to make a Bitcoin transaction.
But I can then choose every subsequent step I do on LinkedIn, whether I want to post, whether I want to do anything. You're talking about something that is used as an actual currency or investment mechanism that is now I'm being
pseudo-currency.
Alright, pseudo-currency.
The pseudo-currency.
I agree with that. I've probably got some strong opinions of this group.
Any letters, write them, send them there.
Three of us with 10 different opinions on the viability of crypto as a currency. But I don't think they're the same thing because I have no other way so dealing with blockchain, I can't do anything on there that's not tracked, right? And if I've already bought into the currency, what am I going to do? Just decide that, bought an asset, don't want to use it now. I'm just going to let it sit.
Cash it out.
But you
also bought in knowing that it was a public chain. I mean, all of this is just, and again, I'm back to LinkedIn and Twitter. These are publicly visible items. Not that I agree with the way people mine them and the fact that they are, but the reality is it's going to happen. So if you're naive and don't realize the implications of taking that action in blockchain, in a blockchain, public blockchain service, then it's no different than, well, what do you mean they're mining my Twitter things to find out more about me?
Yeah, but here's the thing. If the average, average person doesn't even understand pig slaughter. The average person right now, and when I say pig slaughter, the average person, though, and the idea that it's a open digital ledger, if they didn't do that research, right, to know that the ledger is 100% open and visible to the public, so that anybody can look at it. Like one of the ladies.
Oh, don't worry, Ryan. Everybody reads the ClickWrap agreement that you agree to when you sign up for the services.
Absolutely, in detail, and sends it to their lawyer before clicking I agree.
True. Most people do not read that entire thing. I don't. But I waited a really long time before I ever got into crypto. And whether or not I am or am not, not really putting out there right now. But the fact is, the public-facing ledger part of it, one of the ladies in Tracers in the Dark, very early on in crypto when she got interested, because she was huge into cryptography and figuring out ciphers, decided to start doing a few thousand transactions a day, just so she understood, this is when I did the transaction, here's where it landed. Here's what happens if I do multiple at the same time. Here's what happens when I break something up, or if I buy here, buy there, send money there, buy this, and just keep moving, right? And it was like the idea of coding your DNA, right? If you could put a marker on some block. And little by little, she was able to start to build a way to follow where the payments were going. It was like the first step before chain analysis ever existed. And I thought that was really cool because when asked to look at something, like right away, she could go, okay, well, I know that if this payment went out and there was only one new purse open and a second one, right, that this is tied to the payment. I can automatically get rid of 50%. Right, on the ledger. So it created unique ways to follow. So where when I was asked the question, Brian, do you agree with chain analysis? I was like, yes, and here's why. For one, it's an open ledger, but for two, when you're committing a crime, one as heinous as where the book goes, like I can't remember, it's like chapter 28. This is after they took down Alphabay. This is after, you know, Silk Road, Alphabay, and then this. And it was child pornography. But this isn't what these guys thought they were getting into when they started the investigation. This isn't teenagers. You're talking 1-year-olds, 2-year-olds. Some really, really, really bad stuff. And even the people that ended up having to work it were like, it changed. Like, I never ever would want someone to have to watch and do, see mm-hmm. the stuff that we had to see as part of the investigation, right? And to be able to follow, like, it all came back to originally the beginning of the book, an IRS agent who was really interested in cryptography. And the IRS still talks about, you know, like, the biggest case today ever, you know, Al Capone, it's on the walls. Today, the two biggest cases in the federal government history, right, in terms of money, are 100% related to crypto. And it's crazy to see, like, what they were able to, one, discover, but then go back. And the people that they ended up tracking were either, A, making videos, right, or, B, transmitting them and sending them. Some of these were people in the government, teachers, right? Well, people in the government, teachers, or other people. And it was, it's eye-opening. You say, like, yeah, we know that this is around us doing the investigation. Because it's that open ledger, because of chain analysis and other techniques, to be able to follow it, this isn't like coming into court and saying, you know, analytically, this is a 98% chance that this is the person. They're able to come in and say definitively, 100%, the person who owned this wallet made the person who owned this one. And the person who made the video is this person because he sold it to this person. And that's what maybe people didn't understand, that the ledger was open and they could be tracked.
That is the point.
But the same thing can happen and does happen. The whole industry of forensic accounting exists for this exact purpose. And there's been, you know, moves, especially in the U.S., to protect tax revenues, to extend that out around the world, to make sure that they understand where money is going and coming from. Let's leave out the whole part about age verification. But this is not we're using for age verification, but talking about where money is moving to look for things like any, you know, the having worked in banking, things like anti-money laundering are a huge piece of the calculations. And why should or why would someone expect that a public chain, a publicly visible set of transactions would be exempt from such scrutiny?
Sure. I think the bigger difference, though, there, because you're talking about, if you're talking about forensics accounting, or if you're talking about a government agency trying to gain access to where do these payments go, there's a barrier in between. We're talking about somebody getting access to what's considered still private data, right? That's still housed within a company, within a bank, within something that's not publicly out there. My biggest fear is we think that, do I think there is usefulness of blockchain in general, taking away currency, all that? Absolutely.
As a fidelity mechanism, absolutely.
Sure, the traceability of it is really good. But what really concerns me is now that we are heading back to what Cambridge Analytica was able to do. Granted, they did it a lot on social media, and now you have buying habits that you're gonna start getting of people. You know exactly what they're spending money on, and I think this could be pretty dangerous.
Absolutely, which is why you don't use the tech. Which why you don't use that. I mean, public or private aside. Well, I guess no. I think even more. It's even more important that people understand and take it accountability for the fact they're using a public service. It's a publicly open service. Why would you not expect that somebody could or would look at it? Your comment about things in banks and other things, those are things where laws have had to been passed to account for them. But this is something that's visible to everybody. I've had to do similar kinds of blockchain investigations to look for tracing. So, I mean, I get it.
You're getting at the philosophical argument of being an eternal optimist versus an eternal pessimist. And now I have to look at everything I do and expect the worst out of people.
I'm going to step off the curb, Eric. I'm going to look first to make sure a car is not coming, and I have to expect the car, unless I live in Ann Arbor, is going to keep going when I step on that off that curb. So I have to act accordingly. That's self-preservation.
I get it, but I go back to, and I agree with Brian, I don't think the average person has any clue. You hear, well, it's public. Thinking, okay, now moving away from traditional financial institutions, which by depending on different demographics, there's not a very positive view of financial institutions. Got it. But I don't think they take the next step on what type of data they're actually putting out there and what it could be used for. There's no education coming out around any of that.
But does the public, average public care? They're the same people who are using Venmo, who for a long time posted out the comments through a public API, and people were mining those, you know, using this to buy cocaine, you know, and tying it to an actual human name. I mean, there's all sorts of these kinds of examples. And then, you know, the sentiment toward use on social media, the level that things are posting. Again, there's generational questions in all of it, generational differences in all of it. But I guess, is this, there's the problem to solve is making people aware more, sure, but anything in the public, we should now know in 2024, is going to get the shit mined out of it. Period.
Record there, judo? Like,
is that the title of the episode, Mine Everything?
But there's a certain amount of cost. If they really wanted to go back and try to mine everything to figure out who everybody is and who buys pepperoni pizza, there really isn't enough. There wouldn't be enough profit gain and understanding that because there's other...
They're buying that from the credit card. They're getting that from the credit card purchases.
Right. And if they really wanted to know how many people buy pizza with crypto, I think they'd be really disappointed to find out how small that number is. Right. But what is interesting, though, is when you do find a site, like the one that they found in Korea originally, trying to remember it. Anyway, like the same thing with Bangkok's, right? Like... That's how chain analysis starts. When you have something like that happens,
it's where'd the money go?
We're going to find out where the money goes. It took them years to figure that out. Mm-hmm. Right? So it wasn't like they just plugged something in and figured it out. It takes a long time to do it, and then you still have to build the case. So when it came, like the interesting part about shifting from like Alphabay and Silk Road to the child pornography, it was like you went from Silk Road and Alphabay to these guys that were extremely technical. They were cyber gurus. They had set things up to offer a certain level of obfuscation, as well as the fact that once that computer, you had to catch them with the computer open, which makes it really difficult, right? That computer closes, there's no way you're getting in. Where then they get into the child pornography part, and they're like, these people really thought that everything they were doing was hidden. That, it's we're using Bitcoin, right? And they're like, the level of going from the case we just did to plugging in here and immediately being like, oh my God, what is going on? Is this really the person? Like, yeah, it is. But it started with a site that had really, really bad child pornography. And from there, they're able to see this person's purse, right? From there, then they're tracing out. So they're starting with the bad and then moving to who's engaging with them and providing the materials, this person, right? And that's where the chain analysis and the companies were coming together to do this. So, like, I look at it as if the government is using chain analysis, which most of the law enforcement agencies, and this is the part that's really, really tough. When asked, are there any governments like chain analysis? Are there any governments out there that use your product for the wrong reasons? Right? They're like, well, when we find that out, we remove it. We don't allow them to use our software. Kind of reminds me, like, when we talk from the cell phone side of Pegasus, like, well, we try not to sell our software to people that are going to use it that have really bad human rights histories, right? It's like, do you though?
Revenue is good, Brian. Revenue is good. Now, it's...
Profit is good.
Well, profit is good. Profit's really good. I don't deny I work for a for-profit company, of course. Profit is good. But the define good and bad in that. You know, there's, again, an investigatory... I'm not talking about the users or the people they're investigating. I'm talking about the uses. Again, there's legal and there's illegal. If it is legal or there's a legal path to it, then making a good bad assertion is a different thing. I have my thoughts on privacy versus not privacy, but that doesn't play into the legalities of certain things, whether I like the legalities in this country or not. the other thing is, you made the mention about people not realizing there's a huge piece of law enforcement that depends on the stupidity of criminals. And you can't overcome the fact that there are people who just don't know the implications of the work they're doing and if they're doing it in an illegal manner, then why should that prevent, lack of knowledge of the law doesn't excuse not following the law. All of these sorts of things lead me back toward, again, you're doing something out there, you should expect in 2024 that somebody, multiple somebodies, are going to have eyes on it. Whether it's a public entity, whether it's a law enforcement, there's different groups that have different eyes on different things. But I think that there's the expectation that some of it that's being tracked is probably pretty innate by now in people. And it's either just, I don't care, or I'm not thinking about it, and therefore I shouldn't be held to the standard of it. It doesn't play with me.
So to go back to something you said, maybe you didn't mean to say it this way, but it sounded like what you were saying is you were creating a disconnect between privacy and the legality of something.
For the moment.
I think they're directly linked, and I think that's the crux of a lot of our problems, that we refuse to deal with privacy issues in this country. So what do we have? Every state is rolling their own right
now. It's the makes my life well, makes us all much more employable, but a lot more difficult to manage.
And that's one of the problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not building these guardrails that say, okay, we know companies are going to come up with all kinds of creative ways to collect data, to fuse data together, to do all of this, but here's the constructs of how you're allowed to play. These are the rules of the road. You step outside of that, now it becomes a legality issue. But we refuse to actually create that. And debating whether GDPR went too far and there's some middle road, a different conversation, but we need something because technology is just going to continue to evolve, and we cannot, there's no box around it.
Agreed. And then this comes back to, and now, which I will debate against my own comments, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Yeah, the idea of
That's not a legal principle.
I'm talking on the right, but this is you're making my original point for me. As much as I don't like that it's true, it's true. The legalities are the legalities. If it's legal, then there's nothing that stops me from doing it. Is it ethical? Whole other discussion.
So, we've talked about this a little bit before, and this is on the idea of application, cell phone, you know, things that you're using, your phone tracking you, so forth. And nowadays, when you go ahead and open up an app, it's or download it, it asks you, you know, only while in use, right? A lot of times, people don't know that they leak things out or it is in use.
Mm-hmm.
In order for a government agency to track you, you know, they have to submit a subpoena and a request.
Or buy it from a commercial company.
Well, that's the thing.
Oh, did I just rob the punchline? Sorry.
It used to be submit a subpoena.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Now it's just cheaper to get it from Google, to get it from, or not from Google, from a company that's buying the data from resource A, B, C, or D, and now we have everything that we need.
And it's not necessarily illegal to buy it versus acquiring it yourself. So back to legality, of course they're going to take the paths that are legal and available to them. Again, back to the ethics and the should you is a different discussion. But yes, of course. So again, you have to assume that somebody's out there, the you know, cell phone location data is being mined. All of this stuff is being mined. Why wouldn't your Bitcoin transactions be mined?
And it's, it goes back, like, when you look up, oh, sorry, Eric, like, I'm looking for McDonald's. In order for it to tell you the McDonald's closest to you, it has to have the ability to know your location, right?
Yeah.
So, like, people, like, when it pulls up where you last were and it was, like, Arizona, you're like, out there, dumb phone. Like, maybe you should be having it not tracking you.
But this is, and this is where, if we go take this back to economics, that's where share of wallet is supposed to vote out some of those companies are doing that. Like, I keep looking at Apple. Now, I would say Apple continues to do the right thing. That, hey, we may take a revenue hit, you're not going to like this on the apps, but we're going to disconnect and allow the user to choose if we have sharing of information between them. We need more of that in the ecosystem to start creating containers around our data and allow put us in a position to choose whether I want to share that or if I don't. And it should be only opt-in. I should not be opt-in by default.
Like, so, like Adobe scanning your files, your data, that should be an opt-out.
Should be an opt-in. It was an opt-out. For those that don't know, Adobe turned on their AI scanning. Now, I want to be clear. They did not turn on training with this. I railed on it. I got very clearly corrected, and I stand corrected. It is not doing retraining, so documents you do, but it's still doing some kind of mining. I don't have a clear answer if it's on device or if it's being shipped out, but they turned it on by default in Acrobat Reader for the five people that still use it. But apparently, I did find out Windows still doesn't have a native PDF reader, so I think people in Windows use it. But the... but the fact that it went on by default.
That's not true.
What's
that? I can open anything in Edge. I can open PDFs in Edge. That's by
default. Well, of course, Edge can do everything.
There, but...
including importing your Chrome bookmarks without asking. The fact that it went on by default, there are, you know, contracts that exist that say no mining through LLMs. Like, you can't, and the use of PDF, I understand why you want to put it on to get the massive uptake, 100% participation, and then you have to figure out a painful method how to get out of it, just like getting signed up. If I want to use your product, I have to agree in the US to also taking your marketing crap, and then figure out how to get out of it. But same thing here. I'm using Acrobat. It starts mining, and I have to figure out how to do it. By the way, it's also an individual opt-out. And to do it at a company, you had to send in to Adobe, and Adobe's answer was, it's really difficult, and we don't have a method yet. You know, like that kind of stuff. That's not okay. But it's exactly what I expect.
Eric, you were about to say something before, though, and I have a question for you. Have you looked at Monero or Zcash?
No, I haven't.
Granted, when the book ended, I can't remember the timeline there, but I think at that point they said, like, chain analysis had ways of looking at Monero, but Zcash was one that they still thought was, at this point, pretty untraceable, but use the words there, pretty untraceable. Again, I don't know the ins and outs enough outside of reading the entire book, Trace Was in the Dark, and then trying to do my own little research on the side. But I could see the angst when somebody asked me the question, how do you feel about chain analysis? And I took a deep pause. And then I said, knowing what I know now, and reading what I've read, you can't unread or unsee something. And knowing that that exists, this type of crime exists, to be able to use it to trace that, right? Like, I thought was really good. Now,
yeah, it's an ends justify the means.
So we're going to go full philosophical.
This is almost going. This is a tough one, but it's interesting that if I do all of this bad, but then I do this one good, does it justify all of the bad? Right.
I don't know. I think there was a movie with Albert Brooks, Defending Your Life, in which you find out, but not until it's too late.
Yeah. Is this back to like the Nobel Peace Prize? Right? That create dynamite that kills a lot of people. Well, I don't want to be known for that, so I'll create an award that's all about creating.
Let's go back to Adobe. So Adobe, not unrelated to the current thing, Adobe some years ago created an audio engine that had the ability to manipulate audio. They chose not to release, they were considering it the Photoshop of audio. It was the best tool for deepfakes. I'll put a link to the article about it. They chose not to release it because it could be used for too much harm. That's a good thing. Like, that's an ethical analysis. It's like companies don't have to have IRBs like researchers do. Institutional review boards, where you look at the efficacy of your study, the ethics, like any type of human subject research has to have this kind of IRB review, but there's also a huge ethical review. Too often, we don't think about the implications of the thing we do. Back to recent movie pop culture Oppenheimer, you know, the idea that I created this thing that is now being used for, now can be used to destroy the world. It's a tough one, and you don't always know, but if you take some time to think about it now and think through the implications, you also don't know all the ways somebody's going to turn and change how it gets used down the road. It's not a perfect game.
Yeah, I think it's, for those that are listening, the Nobel Prize is named after Alfred Bernard Nobel, who created dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't know that, but in Oppenheimer, that was a great part of the movie when they make that correlation, right? And again, you don't know how something's going to be used. The team working on Oppenheimer's team, pretty much knew what that thing could be used for. And well, I shouldn't say could be used for. They knew what it was going to be used for. War, but to end wars. But they were very worried about what the implications of that would mean. And we've seen how that's played out for the last X number of years. The same thing could be said with the idea behind cryptocurrency. Yes, you know, people thought they could hide behind the veil of it. I don't think people imagined the level of crime that you were going to see. Like, it was cool to see, I don't know if it was Andy Greenberg or one of the other writers, be like, you know, so we tested it out. Maybe we should have got our editor's approval first before we ordered an ounce of, you know, cocaine. But sure enough, it shook up in a box, right? Like, yeah. They're like, whoa. Like, you know, we had to submit it into evidence, but this is crazy. right? We were immediately advised by our legal to go flush it down the toilet. Yes, your experiment worked, right? But you just committed a crime, right? You bought drugs.
So to take that lens and put it back on blockchain, just to make it clear, like, I'm not an advocate we should get rid of it because it's been used for bad, right?
No, yeah.
There's a lot of good that can come off out of it. We just have to figure out, when blockchain came about, it was yet another hype cycle of a solution looking for a problem. So what did we do? We tried to apply it to everything. It's no different than what we're doing with AI, ML, and everything right now. Savior of the universe! And
I'm really just an AI bot.
It's going totally tangential. I think it's fascinating because I still hear the argument that eventually it's going to replace humans and doing all
of I hope so, if it means I can just like chill out and have a margarita.
Have you ever looked at though? So arguably ChatGPT 4.0 is one of the more advanced right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know how many parameters are?
No.
1.76 trillion.
Cool.
You know what the estimate is of the human brain? 100 trillion. The gap between what a human brain can do and what AI, we're still so far off from being able to mimic anything we're doing. But no different than ChatGPT, all of those engines are going to be used. There's going to be nefarious uses.
Sure.
To completely avoid that.
And then we're going to over guardrail it so they become ineffective.
Yeah, but it's one of those pendulum shifting, trying to figure out where is that happy medium.
Yeah, yeah, right? Absolutely.
But the idea of replacing humans, replacing really smart humans, or replacing laborers, right?
Careful there, Brian.
Show me the desk, show me a robot where AI is going to be able to take this.
A level of precision and repeatability.
So for those that are barely listening, not watching the video, Brian was just effectively doing the robot on screen. Amazing.
Yes. But Brian, you don't need AI. But Brian, this is the thing. AI is just repetition. Like, these robots have been in automotive factories for decades.
But they were showing like a human robot. They're like, look, you can pick up the spring. And we gave him three fingers. And I watched the thing lean over and try to pick this thing up and then bring it over. And I'm like, you just showed a $200,000 vehicle because the tag time for him to try to pick that spring up was like a minute. And watching him fumble with the damn thing. Are you kidding?
That's
like he can get better.
That's today. People more. You're right.
If I can take a repetitive task, like answering your questionnaires.
Security questionnaires. Well, I'm all for that. And answering them with some logic, because you can't, you know, whereas, you know, robot mechanics on a line are about repetition and doing the exact same thing every same time. The nuance where you're emulating human thought is helpful, but it's also not going to get you the last mile. I was doing an interview two weeks ago, and you know, we're talking about this in patient safety, why there's this bearish approach toward the use of AI in drug development. It's very, you know, it's much more bullish on the front end where you're understanding, you know, doing things and using it to help pick out scenarios that may or may not be viable. But it's definitely not on the far end when you're doing actual testing. When you cannot replace the real world testing. Brian, this is the discussion you and I had in chat, in text a few weeks ago about that's why we, you know, theory will only take us so far. And then, you know, additionally, the other, you know, that's why we play the game. That's why they play the game. Play the game to see the actual outcome that comes, not just the one you predict will happen. If we could do all this without, it'll take us part, and over time it'll continue to take us further down the line. But the limit of that as X approaches infinity, it may be zero, but maybe it'll never actually, never achieve zero.
Yeah, and just for the record, I do feel bad for the AWS. The Googles of the world.
They're making plenty of money. Don't feel bad for them.
Well, it's the data in, right? Data out, like, if it's crap, right? And when you were building AI 10 years ago and you asked it, will we be able to make cars at a profit of 1,000% like we do tech, and then the robot shot back out? Yes, of course you know, because you are Apple, right? It's like, well, you train the model to say that you're the smartest and best. Guys, you still haven't been able to produce a vehicle. Every 2 years, it's like, oh, we give up again. We're going to focus on AI. It's manufacturing a finished good. It's tough. It really, really, really is hard. I mean, look at RJ Storange at Rivian. The one thing he continues to come back to is it was a lot harder than we thought. Every one of my friends that at some point has decided to start their own business to make a finished good because they had a great idea realizes that the production of it is one of the hardest things you will ever do, producing a tangible good. So at the end of the day, people are very important. If you can use AI as a way to analyze your data, help you create better pivot tables, right? So you can produce better quality.
Well, I mean, if done right, you're deriving connections that are otherwise much harder to see between data.
Yeah.
That becomes...
For good or for bad. The correlation of the things that people do, you know, to better understand your customer population, to create something that's more useful, versus better understand your customer population so you can target manipulative marketing at them so they have no choice but to buy. Two same activities, two very different outcomes and intents.
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah. And one last note here where
C sharp.
I don't know. Well, I was gonna say the Octopus Murders. Dan, did you end up watching it?
No. I haven't watched much TV in the last few months.
That was the Netflix series we were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it.
And watched it on the exact same day. You could have done a watch party.
It's one of those, again, where you look at the technology and how will this be used? Could it be used for bad or could it be used for good? Right? And the premise around a piece of technology that was made and why it was going to be helpful for law enforcement to track cases, if there's a case going on over here versus a case going on over here, and be able to draw correlations and share data, et cetera. But if you can also get a back door and sell it to every other country, and then you can see who they're trying to track. And then you have information on more bad people. How could that be bad, right? What government agency wouldn't want to have a back door into all your criminal systems and all your files and everything else? Like the more I thought about it, outside of just where all these tentacles went, and you just don't know who's who in the zoo. But if you come back to that technology, the very, very beginning of why that's so valuable, right? And why people look at data, it goes right back to the data. The tech was created.
That one sparked the philosophical debate around Socrates, nobody knowingly does evil. By putting the back door, we can track what they're tracking, therefore protecting our people. So therefore, it must be good.
But then you end with the most philosophical question of our industry. Who watches the watchers? And with that, we're going to close for today. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Eric, thank you. Brian, thank you. And thanks to you, the listener. We really appreciate your being part of this. You can find us on our brand new website, distillingsecurity.com/securitydebate. If you go to the old www.securitydebate, greatsecuritydebate.net, you'll get redirected. But this is our new home for all of our current and past episodes, but also all of the other content that's part of the Distilling Security Network now and that will come. We are also on Twitter. I'm not going to stop calling it Twitter. I just can't do it. Something, something, old dog, new tricks. At Security Debate. And you can always email us. Feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net. Thanks again, and we'll see you again on the next Great Security Debate.